Hi, I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. There's been a consensus on science amongst climate scientists, rather, since the 1980s, with over 97% now in agreement that there is a problem with our climate, that it's just getting hotter and hotter and hotter, that humans are involved in this, and people all over the planet are already experiencing devastating effects. But student textbooks, even here in, quote, Green Portland, had been vague on the reality and the causes of climate change. Last spring, the Portland Public School Board unanimously adopted what's been called a groundbreaking resolution for addressing the issues of climate change and climate justice in the classroom. The board mandated that climate change be taught based on science is something that is really taking place and caused by human activity. And especially significant, the resolution calls for the creation of a curriculum that explores the human dimensions of climate change, how people are affected, and what actions need to be taken. My guests today are part of Educating for Climate Justice, ECJ, and they were instrumental in getting that resolution before the board. So I'd like to welcome Gabby Lemieux.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
Gabby actually her bus couldn't make it because it was in a crash, so she ran here all the way from Lincoln High School, which is very commendable, Gabby.
Thank you. She got
here 2 minutes before we started.
Thank you.
And you were at Lincoln and delivered some incredibly moving testimony to the Portland School Board. And Tom Swinhart is a Lincoln High School teacher who writes regularly for Rethinking Schools.
Tim Swinhart, yes. Thank you for having us.
And then he's co-editor of A People's Curriculum for the Earth. Sheila Golden was also working with the ECJ on the resolution. I met her at a flash mob rally to protest oil trains. And you're connected with 350 PDX, right,
yes,
Sheila?
Yes, that's right.
Great. So I'd like to just ask first kind of how the group got established, and each one of you maybe how you funneled into it. What got you into this? And maybe start with Tim.
Sure. There were a couple of things that I think were important to the group coming together and deciding to work on this. One is that a few students from Roosevelt High School sometime last fall decided to actually I think it was even a year ago in the summer that they were working with a teacher, Moe Yanamine, at that school, to look at the textbooks that you talked about the specific textbook in Portland Public Schools that is essentially a climate denial textbook, is the Modern World History book. And so they looked at that with a group of students and a teacher, and they were, having studied the climate crisis, a number of them being Pacific Islanders, having family from the places that are, you know, some of the most affected places by climate change right now, they were outraged by what they saw in the book. You know, one direct quote from the three lousy paragraphs on page 679 that are, you know, the only place in the book where climate change is addressed. The second or third paragraph starts with the line that not all scientists agree with the theory of the greenhouse effect, which is actually just factually wrong.
Right.
You know, it's not even the right word that they're using. And so it's just kind of an attempt to confuse, you know, essentially what we've seen from the fossil fuel industry now for decades. And so they ran with that kind of frustration and anger to do something about that. And so they wrote a letter to all the social studies teachers across the district, kind of alerting them to this and asking for some change, and also had a meeting with the assistant superintendent at the school board, and said, hey, look, you know, we have to address this. We can't, you know, this sort of can't stand as the official curriculum in our school district.
And you were one of those social studies teachers.
You know, that was actually, I have worked with Moe through Rethinking Schools, and she's a friend and a colleague and an inspiration. But that was sort of the work that they were doing at Roosevelt. And I have been, you know, kind of doing similar work at Lincoln, as well as working on the People's Curriculum for the Earth, the book with Bill Bigelow, a retired Portland area teacher that was published by Rethinking Schools. And so that's when we met with Sheila and other folks from 350 to kind of start to think about ways that we could establish relationships with community groups that were interested in seeing climate change taught in the schools.
Right.
So I don't know if maybe Sheila wants to
pick
up from there.
You?
Yes, I think how I came into it was that at that point, I also know Bill because I'm a retired teacher, and we were colleagues at the same time in mm-hmm. different places, and ran into him, and we were talking about the desirability of getting together environmental people from the environmental community and teachers. So we had a meeting at one point in November in 350's premises, in which we all did things together and talked about what our interests were in making climate justice happen. And one thing that came out of that, the largest thing, was that we start meeting on a regular basis towards creating something like a resolution for the school district to pass.
Yeah, and it took you worked on it a long time, because you started in November, and by May it mm-hmm. actually passed by, and unanimously, which is incredible.
Yes.
And then, Gabby, how about you?
So I came into the group a little bit later, mm-hmm. but the summer before my junior year, I'd had an amazing experience where I had gotten this really comprehensive climate change education from Cascade Mountain School. They're an amazing program, but I went back to school and I had all these new ideas about the social side of climate change and all the solutions that there are that we just haven't been putting into effect. And I came back and I started a club at my school called Environmental Service Projects. And through that club, I met another member of the group named Cheryl Lorman. She's the director of a nonprofit called Create Plenty, and she's been an amazing mentor. But I came into the group through her, and then was just hooked instantly, because I realized that if we could get the resolution passed, people could get the same education that I did uh-huh. and get the same inspiration that I did, and just the hope and all of that.
And before you took that class, you had some idea about climate change, but how did this dramatically change your whole outlook?
So the most comprehensive climate change education I'd had before, this was a summer program. It was a camp, sort of, sustainable agriculture camp. But the education that I had had before was in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. We watched a movie called Day After Tomorrow, which is the movie about a superstorm that hits New York City, and it really is just not entirely accurate. It was the only thing that I remember from the climate education that we got in middle school, and it was terrifying to watch it. It was absolutely terrifying. But so I went on, and I felt like ignoring the problem because it was so big and so scary. But then I had that education that I had with Cascade Mountain School, and it completely changed how I think about climate change and all the solutions we have and how much hope there still is.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I listened to some talk by a fellow, I don't know if you've heard of him, Joseph Rahm, and he just has a million ways that you know, programs that we have right now, if we just would implement them, could just really bring down the CO2 numbers.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, so it is doable. but people don't get it. Okay, so anyway, but the other thing about this particular resolution, like, we keep calling it groundbreaking, and I know that that we are teaching, or some cities are starting to teach real climate science, mm-hmm. like in New York or in California. But so what's so groundbreaking about what happened here in Portland?
Yeah, well, I think that's actually a really good question to follow up what Gabby was just talking about, because, you know, I think there's something that that even the environmental community has missed for a long time on this issue, which is that climate science alone is not always that compelling for people. I mean, it paints this picture that is really important to paint. We need to understand the science. But I have found out through 10 years of teaching this that students I don't want to say that they don't care about forests dying, about polar bears, about glaciers melting, okay, because they do. But those things are, those issues alone are not as compelling as it is when we start to study the people that are affected by climate change around the world. And so when we start to study the stories of those people, not only who are affected, but also the people who are fighting, there is this opportunity for kids to develop empathy, mm-hmm. to see the injustice in the situation. And I think by studying people, to start to see themselves in the situation too. It's easy to paint this sort of, like Gabby was saying, you know, whether it's a Hollywood version of climate change, or whether it's kind of just the, you know, studying way too many numbers, you know, parts per million, the inaction even of global leaders. It can be really easy to feel like this is an overwhelming issue that we, it's just too big to look at, right? Like Naomi Klein says, so we look away.
Yeah.
And we continue to look away. But I think that when we have a chance to see and empathize with, and that's, you know, one thing that we try to do in a People's Curriculum for the Earth is to write these stories of people that kids can, you know, can connect with, that it's a curriculum that stories the climate crisis. It's harder to look away, and I don't think people actually, they want to, students don't want to look away. They actually, it sort of, it finds a way into their hearts. And then there's also just this incredible inspiration that comes from the idea that, wow, these folks in the Marshall Islands, for example, that are, you know, they're watching their homelands sort of be swallowed by the sea. They could throw their hands up and just say, this is too big, we can't do anything about this. But they're not. They're fighting.
Right.
That's their motto. We're not drowning, we're fighting, right? And that is just incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, exactly.
For all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the resolution here in Portland then, and Sheila, for you too, was that like the climate justice was a really important part of it for you when you were trying to put this together?
Yes. I feel like that's when you first asked what's so groundbreaking about this. What was groundbreaking about it to me, although not the only time I've seen this, is that we don't frame this issue or see it as climate change and climate crisis. We see it as climate justice, and mm-hmm. there's a difference there. And I think Tim was really talking about that, because you can't address all of the issues globally. You can't think globally and look at what's happening globally to people around the world without seeing so much intertwined social and economic injustice that would have to be addressed in the course of trying to solve the climate crisis.
Right. And so. and it's huge, some facts I saw, maybe I've got it here. The impact on the 1.9 billion poorest people on this planet, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it's tremendously more huge than for us. I mean, it's like they're dealing with, they can't even grow their food, you know, if the droughts or the floods or whatever get too overwhelming for them. And, mm-hmm. and of course, the health consequences and... Yeah, and so Gabby, that probably really affected your heart too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and just if Gabby, if you would for a second, I think there's this other piece of climate justice that I've heard you talk about so much, which is kind of the idea of intergenerational climate justice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to?
Right. Yeah. I see my peers and all the people, all the kids that are in schools today have tremendous power that we don't even realize. Mm-hmm. Tremendous organizational power and just a passion. And I think that, you know, I think that my generation is going to believe in climate change. I think that we're going
Finally.
To see. I think that our generation is going to see more evidence of its reality than any other generation. And we just, unless we get more resolutions like this, unless we get more education, we're just not going to know what to do about it. So climate education has to start all the way from kindergarten. It has to start from when you're young. And of course, it has to be, the education has to be different based on ages, but all generations have to be included. It affects everyone in the world, and it's so important that everyone comes together, no matter their age, no matter race, gender, everything.
Exactly. And well, first, I just want to mention that you're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is the Recovery Zone on. And my guests are Gabby Lemieux, Tim Swinehart, and Sheila Golden of the group Educating for Climate Justice. They're working with the Portland schools to create a curriculum that deals with the realities of climate change. And you talk about being climate literate, and that's what you talked about when you addressed the school board. So what exactly does that mean to you then, climate literate? I mean, and this is like that your generation needs climate literacy to even make
yes.
sense of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned in my testimony that climate literacy is just the bare minimum standard that we need to be successful and to be able to function in a green economy. So for me, climate literacy means not only knowing the science of climate change, but knowing every other aspect, how it affects social, how it affects social life, that's the most important part, really, is the justice side of it. And seeing it not just as something that's happening to the environment, something that's happening to the trees and the forests around you, but what's happening in your city and what's happening to you and your family and your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just to follow up on that, I think that part of climate literacy and a piece of really important piece of this resolution, and there's language in the resolution to this effect, is that part of an education that is really appropriate and that is effective is also an education that's empowering. Right.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
it's definitely. So, you know, we need to understand how this is, you know, happening to us, as Gabby said. But it's also really important that students can see themselves as agents of change, as people who are capable of, you know, whether it's through the decisions they're making in their families or whether it's by, you know, joining hands literally with other people in the community, how they are capable of being part of a movement that can transform and can change the things about the world right now that we can see need to change, right, really quickly. And, you know, and I think one thing I've seen as a teacher, which we have not necessarily been providing the opportunity to students to do, is, you know, you have, you know, Gabby's in here talking today, but there are students across the district who are hungry for classes that address this in real and meaningful ways, you
right.
know, that are looking for opportunities to kind of, you know, to join forces with community organizations that are working on this to see how this plays a role in their future. Right. And so part of the resolution is saying, well, hey, let's figure out how we can start to provide classes like that. You know, so it's in the curriculum. And then there are these spaces where kids start to see themselves as activists, you know,
right.
as people who some of whom are going to devote their lives to this. Right. And providing that space, I think, is really crucial and really like they. It's part of respecting where they're at and giving, you know, this generation of students what they need and deserve as far as an education.
Yeah, it's an education that's really relevant to your life, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to just some off-in-the-air kind of fantasy stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like the school board itself, I mean, it did say that even the Portland Public Schools needed to, in this resolution I noticed, you wanted to make sure that the district was like modeling. So in other words, like the buildings would be.
Mm-hmm.
So is all of this going to be really part of what happens? Like that the buildings are more energy efficient and can they really do all this?
I would hope so. I think that there's a lot of construction going on across the district. A bunch of schools are being remodeled. And I think that that's an opportunity to show what PPS cares about. And I think that they could model those buildings to be more energy efficient. And we talked about a lot while we were drafting this that the building is part of a student's education.
Exactly.
So how a student sees the things that go on inside a building is what they'll take away about recycling, about composting, about energy use. So if we could make the building a place where they see solar panels being used and they see efficient composting and recycling programs, they would take that with them and that would become part of just what they know.
And also it would give probably, I think, the students a sense that the school cares about them.
Yeah, exactly.
Cares about their future.
Yeah.
You know, and is also doing its best to make sure that we have a future. And so, but there were a couple things that didn't get passed, and those were basically related to fossil fuel companies that let's see, your justice committee had wanted to make sure that there were that the board didn't engage in partnerships with fossil fuel companies and that offer legitimacy to those companies, and they wouldn't go along with that. They also wouldn't go along with the board taking a position on the expansion of infrastructure to store or transport fossil fuels. So how do you guys feel about that, that they actually did not go along with some of the things that you'd asked for?
Well, at the time we felt that we had gotten the core of what we'd asked for. So the night that it passed, most of us were pretty happy.
Celebration time.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And that the two things you mentioned
Absolutely.
Were our wanting to give a sense of being in alignment with what the city of Portland was doing.
Uh-huh.
Because our own discussions about a resolution happened at almost the same time that this resolution was being under consideration at the city council. So it was on people's minds.
Right.
So
right. And the city council did approve it, but the Portland Public Schools.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, some of us enviros have this thin green line kind of belief that if environmental policies and actions are aligned with each other all up and down the West mm-hmm. Coast, that will create a much stronger entropy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think one other thing that's, you know, it's important for all of us to keep in mind, too, about these resolutions, and I think you see a similarity between both of them. You know, it's one thing for a political body, whether it's the city council or the school board, to pass a resolution, right? You know, so that becomes a form of policy. But it's even once those are passed, it still takes pressure from activists, from the grassroots, right, to make sure that those policies are implemented in the way that, you know, the sometimes sort of lofty language of a resolution intends. And so we've seen that both at the level of the city council as well as the school board, where people, you know, 350 PDX being, you know,
This is a national test of the emergency alert system.
Now of working with the school board to create a curriculum, mm-hmm. and how's that going? I mean, what do you meet every week or every month, and are they all on board with you, or are you getting pushback? Or
we actually have a meeting today. We had our first meeting a couple weeks ago, and uh-huh. it went really well. We had a lot of members from the older group that started the draft of the resolution, and then we brought in some new members, and we have Mike Rosen is on the committee with us.
School board member.
And he was very supportive of your resolution.
Very supportive, yeah. He helped us sort of take it through the process of presenting it to the school board and was very helpful. But our first meeting was great. It was really nice to meet everybody, and we got all kinds of ideas down about how to implement this. And some of it is not even just curriculum, but events that PPS could hold and gatherings that students could come to and teachers could come to. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe one, this is probably a good time, one specific example of that I wanted to make sure to mention today is there's a couple things actually, but in a few weeks, the committee is going to sponsor this event with Marshallese climate activist mm-hmm. and poet, Kathy Gentnell Kitchener, who has presented her poetry about climate change, climate justice in front of the United Nations, and just some really powerful work. And so she's going to be in Portland. She actually has some family here in Portland, so she's going to be here for a few weeks, and we're going to hold an event with her. I think our event with teachers is October 14th. We're still kind of putting the details together.
So the teachers will be coming to that event.
So that'll be sort of like, you know, that's an example of the kind of you know, teacher training, professional development, uh-huh. which is a piece of this policy, which is, you know, it's raising awareness for teachers, but then also putting them in the position of, you know, I'm sure that Rethinking Portland Area, Rethinking Schools will sponsor that in sort of the vein of how we like to involve teachers with things. We'll listen to her poetry, but then we'll ask teachers to write and kind of put them in the position of students who are also trying to process this, right? And again, kind of trying to find that way into our hearts, you know, in the way that I think is so important with these issues.
Then how does that work? Is this a volunteer thing for teachers to come? Are they going to be mandated to go to these events and take courses? How are you going to make
That's still to be determined.
Right.
The one on the 14th would probably be volunteer, because that's a day that teachers don't teach and they're not really working. So it's only if they would like to come. But there are definitely other possibilities of professional development days in which teachers, there'd be like no classes taught for the whole day, and teachers would be gathering at different parts of the district specifically to do certain kinds of professional development training, and this would be one of them.
To learn about climate,
yes.
Basically. And I imagine that Portland teachers are kind of up on it, but has that, Gabby, like been your experience that all your teachers know about this already, or do you feel like they still need more to learn more?
I think that everyone can learn more.
A lot more.
For sure, definitely. I've only received positive comments from my teachers, and especially from my peers and from the students I go to school with. And I think that people are just really eager to know what climate justice means. It's like we of course have some climate change education, and that's incorporated into our science classes. But I think that people are really excited to see where climate change fits into our history classes and where it fits into our social studies classes and our English classes. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and I think I think what's important there is that I think teachers are no different than anyone else that when it comes to this issue being potentially overwhelming, you know. So I think there are a lot of people, teachers included, who really care about this and they know it's important, but again, it feels so big. You know, and you're trying to figure out, okay, how, you know, here are the units, you know, over the course of the year, and here's my curriculum. And it's one of those things that I think for a lot of people maybe is just too big and too hard to figure out how to incorporate. So I think that, you know, what those folks need and want, a lot of them probably, is some help, you know, and to be able to work together. I mean, what I have seen over 13 or 14 years of teaching now, that unfortunately with kind of the education reform movement is being valued less and less in the way that teachers are trained. But
this is the making them the testing and all that.
Yeah, so yeah, you know, whether it's testing or standardized curriculum or you know, just kind of carving into that professional space that is so essential to teaching. But when you get teachers together and give them time to work on things that they care about, I have overwhelmingly had the experience that, you know, that we are a group of professionals who care about what we do, and that people are capable of, with kind of the right supports, of coming up with incredible curriculum and ways of engaging students. And so I think, you know, one of our hopes as we work on implementing this over the next few years is that we provide the space and the time, and then, like you ask, you know, in some cases the money too to do that, right? Because that's part of making sure that this happens is for the district then over the course of maybe the next 2 or 3 years to allocate some significant funds to teacher training for
make this an important issue. I want to let listeners know again, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is the Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. I'm speaking with three members of the group Educating for Climate Justice, and they were instrumental in getting a resolution passed last spring to bring climate science and climate justice to Portland public schools. Now they're collaborating with the Portland school system to create that curriculum. If you'd like to call in with a comment or a question, the number here at KBOO is 503-231-8187. And back to the curriculum. So what exactly, there's going to be role-playing books? I mean, what are some examples then of what you guys are going to be putting into the classrooms?
Well, we're still sort of in the process of getting that started. Yeah, and I think that as we've been saying, we're hoping that it's sort of a ground-up process, from teachers and students and engaged people, identifying what they are interested in, what appeals to them, what draws them, and then finding resources, and then hopefully creating some of their own materials, or exchanging with other teachers, or even exchanging with teachers in other places about materials that are good and that are out there.
Just really sharing.
Yeah, we're not particularly interested in finding another all-purpose text to replace the text.
Right, because it's changing so fast. It's part of it, isn't
and
it?
Texts are always sort of like frozen moments in time.
Right.
You're better off in keeping things moving and replaceable.
So good websites, for instance, might be good.
Yeah, yes.
That kind of thing. And the whole activism part of it, like, is there, like, there was a lot of pushback from especially with the right-wing press and stuff after this resolution got passed. I mean, I'm reading the comments, even in some op-ed that actually was sort of down on it, that was in the Oregonian, talking about it being censorship and book banning and all this stuff. Yes. And the comments were really kind of negative about what you guys are trying to do. And if the schools are actually promoting activism, it's kind of political. How does this all play out in a democracy, in a way, you know, that the schools are taking one side, and yet you've got this other quote side that's saying this is wrong and bad and terrible?
Well, okay, just to throw this in, to me, there aren't two sides about the climate science.
Of course.
I mean, you know, that's what climate skeptics and climate deniers are saying.
Yeah.
You know,
all the letters to the editor. What is that?
Yeah. So as for the whole right wing noise machine that you were referring to,
that was
sort of an interesting example to see that in motion. That we had one local media outlet, the Portland Tribune, that published a semi-negative account of the resolution. And that story was picked up and run by like hundreds and hundreds of right-wing media outlets throughout the country. And sometimes reprinted verbatim. So it told me why and how. It showed me how powerful that network is.
Yeah, I just got a little card here. It says, talk about Lars Larson and how he railed against the climate curriculum, calling it fascist. The person thought.
And for me, too, and this is my personal opinion, it's sort of a backdoor compliment. Because if they notice us enough to denounce us, that means we're doing something.
Yeah, you're getting it out there.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a very, very interesting experience to see the response to the resolution. I had people on Facebook try to contact me, asking me if I was a neo-Hitler youth who had passed the resolution. So it was a little bit jarring, but I was mostly really excited to see that it was trending on Facebook. Like, people were talking about it.
It was all over the world.
The negative comments were inspiring almost, because it's like, wow, we really need education.
and that goes with like what Tim was saying about how even teachers themselves feel overwhelmed, or maybe it's a feeling of, I don't want to, like that movie you watch, The Day After Tomorrow, I don't want to just discourage my students and make them feel all hopeless and despairing,
right?
But the whole idea that you've got this kind of negativity, you're trying to make this happen, and what do you do with just changing minds around it? I mean, and I saw this thing, actually, it was that 31% of the teachers in America in a February survey that was taken are saying that it's not, 30% were saying it's natural, 1% were saying that it's unsettled science, which leaves like only 29% of the teachers teaching real climate change across the country. So, but maybe this resolution you feel like is groundbreaking on the level of bringing this kind of stuff to the country?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it does a couple things. I think, you know, that the school board taking a position on this is important. You know, our school board is saying we acknowledge, we honor, and we are giving light to, you know, the certainty of climate science and the fact that this is a crisis and that it's going to affect the students that we have a responsibility to educate, right? And we're no longer going to kind of waffle or equivocate, based on this 30-year campaign that is really easy, you know, to follow the money that has been orchestrated by the fossil fuel industry, right? To the point all along has never been to actually present decent science or, you know, anything else, right? That sort of shows the that climate change isn't happening. The entire point has been to sow the seeds of doubt and to cause confusion. And it's the exact same thing.
Keep us buying gasoline for our cars. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and just to sort of, you know, make, you reference this study that showed that, you know, that teachers sort of teach, quote unquote, both sides of this issue, the way that, you know, we're often sort of taught that, well, we, you know, as teachers, we present this objective reality in our classrooms, right?
You as a social studies teacher.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, and so there's this notion there that is in a case like this is just misguided, right? Because so I think, again, teachers without training or sort of understanding about the entirety of this issue, right, about why it's an issue of justice, why there's a morality to the way that we teach about this too, that it's not just about science, but it's about our ideals, our values, our morals, again, that's just, it's doing exactly what this industry-funded campaign intended all along, It's the same thing the tobacco industry did so successfully for so long. And we finally woke up, right? And we changed the laws and the policies. And it's no longer, you know, a health teacher, it would be absurd to expect a health teacher to stand up in front of the classroom and say, well, here are some of the benefits of smoking, right? I mean, we all laugh, right? But that's essentially sort of where we're still at with climate change. Right. Like, well, let's sort of talk about the pros and cons of this.
But I think that part of it, though, is that the difference between smoking is that a lot of people don't smoke, but with climate change, we're all kind of implicated in it, you know, and our system is implicated in it. I mean, in a way, it's like, how radical does this get? I mean, Naomi Klein wrote a book, what was it?
This Changes Everything.
This Changes Everything, Capitalism and the Climate Crisis, basically. I mean, can this school... The schools in Portland, if they really follow where this is all going, how radical do you think the schools might get?
I think it's about how radical the students get.
Uh-huh.
Not how radical the... I mean, the schools are just giving us the proper education. What we do with that is entirely different.
Right. And there are people that say that actually, like Investment Daily, I mean, I've seen these things where investors are advising their clients to you know, look at the climate when they're like making their stock purchases and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it's not totally outside capitalism.
Well, and you know, we even like that even begs the question of what's radical, right? I mean, Bill McKibben has sort of made famous the idea is like, look, you want to know what's radical? The companies that are continuing to add carbon to the atmosphere, knowing that they are wrecking the planet. Right. He's like, what's more radical than that, right? And so, I think like Gabby just said, what we're intending to do here is to recognize the historical moment that we're in, what this generation, the world that this generation is growing up into, and what kind of education is actually going to prepare them for that.
Yeah. Well, that's really profound.
Yeah, I think what Gabby said was great, and that schools are sort of doing what they're there to do when they make that information available. I mean, it's the lack of information that keeps people helpless or caught up in the wrong solutions.
Right.
So we're the information givers as the institution, and the students are the ones that take that information and do things with it.
Just hearing the basic facts about climate change, it's hard not to feel quote-unquote radical.
Yeah, because I kind of go along with the name and Klein. This does change everything. It's a lot of things really need to shift, including our lifestyles, including and the school systems, everything. It's a very difficult situation that really we're in right now, and it's hard. Anyway. So we're like talking about this too, though, that that climate justice, the roots, capitalism, the fossil fuel obstructionism, and all that. But I was also going back to those teachers that 61% then are teaching like it's unsettled or it's a natural thing. 30% aren't. But the National Academy of Sciences came out and said that it was a fact, climate change, back in 2010. So you're really just demanding that. Like, as you said, it's like smoking or something.
Right.
Yeah. And so you're going to be giving, I was sort of back to, like, the curriculum again. Mm-hmm. What would an example, say, of a role play be? Like, if you guys were going to do a role play. I mean, could you just give me an example?
Sure. I could probably talk about this a little bit. I've spent a little time working on curriculum the last, I say that, I my wife, Emily, would probably say a little time. spent a lot of time working on curriculum over the last 10 years on climate change. And, you know, and a lot of what I need to give a whole lot of credit to Bill Bigelow, who's not here today, as someone who has just been a tremendous mentor to me as a teacher who taught here in Portland for 30 years and who has focused his entire career on teaching for social justice and is still in retirement continuing to do this work. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, something I learned from him is that when students are, you know, number one, they're up out of their chairs, number two, They're interacting with each other. Number three, they are taking on the roles of, they're stepping outside of their own shoes, their own skin for a moment to say the one role play that I wrote, I guess maybe 5 years ago, was called The Indigenous Peoples Confront the Climate Crisis. And it was based on a gathering, one of the first gatherings of indigenous groups from around the world in Anchorage, Alaska in 2009. And so we took a few of those groups and we wrote up their stories. You know, so you have the Bambara tribe from Africa and the Dene people from the American Southwest. And we had people of the Amazon and Yupik tribes from the Arctic. And so they all come together and they talk about how climate change is affecting them. And so students get the roles, and they're pretty like, extensive, well-researched roles. So they provide a lot of information. Sometimes we do something called writing an interior monologue, where students then would, they'd kind of take that, the information of that role, and then try to personalize it by writing a story.
What that would be like for them.
Yeah, exactly. So you put yourself in these shoes, and so then they, so part of it is really trying to get into that role. And then once they've done that, then to take that on and to come together to teach each other, about the different situations around the world, as well as to come together as a group at this sort of mock conference to talk about what they're sort of demanding from the rest of the world when it comes to action on climate change. And it's remarkable, every
time.
So
you've seen the students do this?
Oh, yeah. No, I've done it with probably hundreds of students. I've done it with adults in workshops in different parts of the country. And it's it lends this entirely different way, I think, for folks to get into this issue. There's not a lot there about parts per million of CO2. There's not a lot of kind of the way that global leaders are failing. I mean, there's some of that, but it's this example of grassroots activism around climate change, and it brings a lot of humanity to the issue. And I think that just as a teacher, seeing how important that is to students has been a real wake-up call for me from when I first started teaching about these issues.
And is that the kind of thing you were doing when you were at your school, Gabby?
The role plays?
Yeah.
We never had anything as sort of in-depth as that. It was the climate education that I've gotten has been sort of like maybe a couple paragraphs in a textbook, go home and do a worksheet on it, and then we move on to the next thing.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really excited.
But
to
the
do
program
a seminar
that got you fired up about climate
change. Cascade Mountain School. So actually, that was sort of in the field. We were in Trout Lake, Washington, which is a small town known for its sustainable agriculture, and we were able to go out every day and talk to somebody who was a farmer or who regulated the pH of the water. We went and talked to all kinds of specialists, all kinds of professionals, and That was really, really effective. And I think that we could do that in these classes. We could go out and we could talk to people, or people could come in and talk to us. And I love the idea of doing seminars. I love how engaging that is. And I also think that we hardly need a role play. You could ask students to write a letter to their senators about their concerns about climate change, and that's a real thing that they could do.
As you said, my generation is concerned. Yeah. I mean, not my generation, your generation. Yes. And I just want to let listeners know, again, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is the Recovery Zone. My guests are Gabby Lemieux, Tim Swinehart, and Sheila Golden of the group Educating for Climate Justice, and they're collaborating with the Portland Public School System to create a curriculum that empowers students to work toward a more just and sustainable future. If you'd like to call in with a comment or a question, the number is 503-231-8187. And I was thinking, too, that you could just go out and probably talk to people here in Portland. Like, I was reading that Portland is even like the injustice of it here is that people who are living in poor areas of Portland near freeways, et cetera, are more cases of asthma.
Right.
That there's
the glass factories.
Hot spots in the outer edges of Portland, say in the southeast and the northeast, where there's not so many trees, and people are much hotter, and those are the poorer people again often.
Right.
So there's a lot just here if we wanted to go out and talk to people and do role plays, it sounds like.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, and that's one of the things also that we were pretty lofty with the way we wrote the resolution. So, you know, the kind of, mm-hmm. I think we ended up calling it field study in the resolution, but the kind of mm-hmm. education that Gabby was just talking about, you know, where you're out engaged with whether it's farmers or, you know, folks working in the community on different projects. But another thing that's in there is that we really want to, as we move forward with this implementation, we want to involve people from frontline communities as much as we can. So people who, you know, are the most affected right now by climate change, you know, or folks sometimes that are on the front lines of fossil fuel extraction is also an example of the opposite
front line.
Yeah, well, right. And of course they're kind of, it's almost the same line, right? I mean, it's, they're different lines, but they intersect as well. And, you know, we have, it sounds like one of the, in Salem, we have one of the fastest growing Marshallese communities of oftentimes Marshallese refugees from, you know, people who are fleeing their
homes.
They're climate refugees, right?
Right,
you know,
right.
Figuring out ways to involve those communities to bring their voices into what it is that the district is doing moving forward with this curriculum is really high on our priority list.
Yeah, that's huge. And actually, Portland itself, they're talking about more and more people moving here, and that mm-hmm. parts of our own country are going to become places where people can't live anymore.
Yeah.
Underwater, mm-hmm. yeah. too burned
yes.
up, too hot.
That's already happened, actually. There's is it Virginia?
The first designation the federal government, I think, over the summer gave the first designation of climate refugees from it's an indigenous tribe in Louisiana.
Right. Or Louisiana, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yep,
and
so.
even the military. I was reading that on the East Coast, practically every military base is being threatened with being swamped and flooded mm-hmm. and underwater, and climate refugees from the military. I mean, it's kind of amazing. Oh, we have a call. Charlie, do you want to give your question, Charlie, or your comment?
Yeah, hi. I'm very grateful for this show and for other efforts that KBOO's done, you know, to raise consciousness around environmental issues. And I just wanted to make a simple comment just to the normal, I think, reaction on people when they think environmental activist is to think something negative, like somebody who's, you know, climbing trees and preventing business and blah, blah, blah. I would like to also point out that you can be positive about it and educate kids, especially younger people, about the beauty and the precious and complexity and wonder of nature, and thereby reconnect them with that and reacquaint them with that, so that then they have a very good, clear, present idea about why they want to protect nature.
Right.
And I think that's missing. I think there's a lot of folks in this country, especially who have really been put out of touch, either, you know, consciously or unconsciously with nature, and that we have lost our connection, and then there are some who have the connection, and there's a clear dividing line between those people, and I'd like to see more of the people who have lost their connection regain a connection.
And thereby
be motivated to act in appropriate ways.
And I think what's going on here, though, is not that nature doesn't matter, but that we're also talking about that other people matter, and that's kind of what this resolution is also addressing.
Well, and that's, yeah, I mean, I really appreciate
it. And nature is, we need it for our lives.
And that separation is, it's a false distinction, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we're animals.
We're
part of
animals.
Nature, right? I mean,
yes.
So yeah, I think that that's, I really like what the caller said too about kind of this idea that, you know, environmental activism doesn't have to be a bad word, right?
Right.
I mean, there are so many students like Gabby who are like, yes, I want to learn about environment. I want to be I am an environmental activist.
I've never
right?
chained myself to a tree.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
yeah.
and that also that part of the positive is that there are renewable energies that could completely eliminate the need for fossil fuels.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen this in a lot of places. But we have another caller. Hello? Was there another caller? Hi, Sam. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay, what would you like to say?
So you were talking about student activists?
Yeah.
What did you think about the Oakland band that all kneeled? They all kneeled during the national anthem.
Oh. I haven't seen that. But
yeah, we haven't seen that or talked about it, but it's not exactly part of what we're talking about here.
No, I know, but just talking about kids having guts.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is exactly. That's a great, I mean, these movements, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement that I think has inspired youth across the country in ways that a movement for racial justice has not probably since the 1960s, right? And
right.
So, I mean, yeah, how, yeah, exactly. Guts, you know, for, yeah, great point.
And racial justice is definitely a part of the climate justice movement, you know,
absolutely.
Because poorer people tend to be, people of color tend to be more marginalized and more out there in terms of just suffering from all this.
I love your program, Stephanie.
Great, thanks. So anyway, moving on here. But we do have a lot of support for what you guys are doing because I read that the National, the Teachers Association.
They're
really behind it.
It's the NEA.
And this is nationwide.
Yeah. In July, the NEA passed a resolution acknowledging what Portland did and holding it up as a model, and it's to encourage other school districts around the country to emulate and use our model. And from what I know, something is already in the works in Seattle.
Oh, great.
Hmm. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually there, we've gotten attention from number of different groups. One foundation has given, I think through Rethinking Schools, gave a small grant to kind of put together a seed packet that would go out to people around the country that are interested in doing this sort of work, this kind of climate justice education work within their own communities to bring to their own school boards.
And are people calling in to get this packet?
Yes, yep, yeah.
So
yeah,
this is definitely other school boards. And then, like, to get it to happen in other school boards, you have a lot of sort of instructions for how to do that then, right? And that would be basically to, you know, meet, have something very clear that you're trying to get before the board. And how about dealing with the negativity again, or hopefully each time there's less?
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe they're part and parcel of what I think the right-wing reaction after our resolution passed was because in some ways they recognized the import of this. They realized that there might be communities, there would be communities around the country that would say, hey, we can do that. And yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are. So.
And so, and Seattle is actually starting to take it up now.
From what I've read, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe the whole West Coast will eventually be doing
I think
that.
We've also been in communication with people in Santa Cruz. So California as well.
That's incredible. So, and you were saying again that there's some event that's happening.
On Thursday. Yeah.
Can anybody go to that?
Anyone? Yeah, it's open to the public. They're asking for the event is, it's put on by APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, co-sponsored by the NAACP, and it's the Marshallese climate activist and poet that I mentioned earlier, Kathy Gentnell Kitchener. And so she'll be speaking as well as kind of in conversation with Joanne Hardesty, the local chapter president of the NAACP. It's Thursday night, 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church. And they are asking for $10 donations or a ticket price for people who can afford it, but they've also said that no one will be turned away.
And your group, your own group, do you guys have a website? Educating for Climate Justice?
We should get a website.
We were too busy putting the resolution together. So
if people wanted to get involved in it, are you welcoming more people to get involved, or how does that go?
I mean, I think is the answer to the question. I think, you know, we're sort of in this position now trying to figure out, you know, as our group got the resolution passed and now we have sort of this formalized district committee that's working, you know, to move the resolution forward and implementation. So So figuring out what our the original group that met to do this, what we do moving forward is still a bit of a question.
But it's connected to 350 PDX.
Yeah, actually, if anyone's listening and is really inspired to get involved, like as of right now, why don't they just contact 350?
Definitely.
And that would and 350 Portland. That's 350PDX.org. Yeah, .org, and they will get the information to me.
Uh-huh.
And the names.
Yeah, and so more people are welcome to join to
absolutely.
Get involved and make
absolutely.
This really happen. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's great. And you guys have, so 350 PDX, and just basically last thoughts that any of you would like to share
you know, for
about
me,
all this.
For me, what we've been saying in a way throughout almost the whole, this whole hour is the importance of activism as an antidote to feeling helpless and outnumbered and no hope and despair, because this is the common problem. You know, when people first get exposed to some of this information, this is the common reaction. And that's not necessary. And finding out what actually is out there and meeting people who are working on it with you is incredibly empowering. You end your isolation and you move to do something.
And things change, like pipelines do get stopped. And
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And how about you, Gabby?
Well, if there's any students listening or if any students end up listening to this, I say bring something like this, bring something like the resolution that we have to your own school and start a club at your own school. Just get a movement going within your peers and all your other classmates, because there's a lot of power there. A lot more power than I think we realize, and this could be a really empowering thing for your community.
Right. And you yourself are involved with starting groups, and you've been part of actions like the Break Free Actions.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And for you, that's felt, as you say, you just felt, rah, I can do it now.
Absolutely,
huh?
Yes. It was incredible. I had never seen so many people come together, this is at Break Free, over climate justice, and it was... I just had such hope after the march that we did.
Right. That's great. And how about you, Tim?
Well, I just wanted to just follow up a little bit on that. Gabby's testimony at the school board the night that it passed was, I think, a part of that vote. So anyway, saying that, you know, talking about, so she got asked by people, hey, you're too young to do this. And, you know, and you said basically like,
we don't have any time to waste.
Yeah, my activism starts now or it works never. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah. So you're feeling pretty inspired. And
I get to work with, 90 students each year at Lincoln who are the biggest source of hope on this issue that I could ever ask for. They're ready and willing to do the work, to learn, and to change the world that they're growing up into. And I couldn't ask for any more hope than that.
Yay, team. Okay. You've been hearing from members of a group called Educating for Climate Justice, which was instrumental in getting a groundbreaking resolution passed last spring by the Portland School Board to mandate for climate science and climate justice in the public schools. Now they're working with the school system on the new curriculum. This is KBOO Portland, your non-corporate, volunteer-run community radio station, which depends for its funding on donations from listeners like you. This has been The Recovery Zone. I'm Stephanie Potter. Thanks to Tammy for her fine engineering, and thank you for listening.